So, I was curious about those matriarchal names because I've got a good one for you here in a minute from the Bible. So, we've been talking about the life of Moses and the character of Moses and calling this series Mosaic. And every week I say the same thing in the first few slides. I'm going to repeat myself again. But we're looking at this artwork of a life. And what's so beautiful about all of you is all of you are this incredible, your life is this mosaic of all these different experiences and your personalities, your successes, your failures, your hopes, your dreams. It's just an amazing package that's not like anyone else. Your giftings that God has gifted you with, and so many things that you bring into this world that God has crafted you in. And just that type of artwork, mosaic, is such a fascinating way of putting a picture together, because you got to put all these tiny little pieces together just like each of you and just like Moses. And that's what we're doing. We're piecing together this fascinating personality who was this unrivaled leader in the history of Israel. The Bible talks about how nobody else did the amazing things that God did through him. Nobody else spoke to God in such a face-to-face personal level as Moses. He had this incredible weight of influence with God, and he was able to get between God and the Israelites several times to affect the destiny of the Israelite nation, because they wanted to go one way and God was going to let them go, but Moses kept praying and kept pleading for his people, and God listened to Moses. And so we're looking at all the different things the different ingredients that went into this personality of Moses, and trying to kind of learn from him, because he was far from perfect. And I hope if you've been part of the last several weeks, you've been able to relate to several of the flaws and frailties in Moses' character. And it's so encouraging to me to see that God doesn't sit around and wait for that perfect leader to show up that he's going to use. He calls us as is, which is scary. You ever bought anything as is? You know, those are two scary words on the sticker on the car in a car lot, right? You know, you're always hoping there's still some warranty left, you know, and you see that as is, and ooh, I like the price, but now I'm nervous. But God takes us as is. We don't come with a warranty. He just loves that. And he just loves to shape us and reshape us, no matter what we've done, no matter where we've come from. But there's this incredible influence, this factor, this ingredient that we sort of skipped over in the early weeks. Now you see why. I was kind of saving it for today. So this incredible woman in Moses' life, that really her involvement had a huge foundation. How do you even pronounce? Now here's a matriarchal name for you. And so, how would you say it? Throw it up. Boy, it gets butchered on the internet. Yeah, Jochebed is how. And so, I mean, there's not even a J sound in Hebrew. Hey, Mom, how would you do this one in Arabic, even? Like, how would this? Yeah, there you go. Oh, that's so good. I love my mom's voice. That's just so, let's do it again, Mom. That's so pretty. Say it again.
What?
You say it, say the name again.
Yeah,
see that? And so in Hebrew, it's got a little more the Yocheved. Yeah, the B comes out more of a V. But it's that Y. It's Yocheved or Yocheved. And so, but it's, boy, you say it's so pretty. I say we go with that. And so, kind of a famous painting. Is that's okay for church, right? Not too risky. So, it's like evidently Pedro's 1884 piece of Moses and Jochebed is fairly famous. And so we touched on the story early on, but we didn't really spend that much time on it. I want to go a little more into depth in the early chapters of the book of Exodus and describing Moses' childhood. Because remember, Pharaoh was in fear of the rising population of the Hebrews. They had started off just this small family of shepherds. Remember Jacob's family, Israel, the boys, the sons of Israel that became the 12 tribes of Israel. The story of Joseph, how his brothers sold him. You guys have all seen the Technicolor, you know, multi-technicolor coat play. So, you know everything there is to know. His brothers sold him into slavery in Egypt, and he went from a house slave to a prisoner to somehow, miraculously, the right hand of Pharaoh himself. And then he was able to bring his family in. He forgave all his brothers. Had a little fun with them first, but forgave them all. And then they went from 12 families to, you know, hundreds of thousands, to where Pharaoh said, we got to do something about this, and started a plan of infanticide, you know, of killing off all the Hebrew boys. And so, but that wasn't going to get in the way of Jochebed. Now a man, and we don't even get to hear a name in this story. We got to find that out in another chapter. Now a man of the tribe of Levi, so Levi was one of those original brothers. And so one of his descendants, a Levite woman, one of the guys married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was a fine child, this is kind of a silly phrase. I mean, what mom, like, doesn't think, you know, that her child, I mean, this word gets translated beautiful, or, you know, it struck her, you know. But I mean, what mom doesn't feel like that? So I don't know. But she, I think every mom responds like that. However, she was going to do something about it because of this new, you know, declaration of what was going to happen to the boys. When she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. So she did that. The midwives, the Egyptian midwives, were under orders to grab those baby boys and chuck them in the Nile. And so, but she worked faster than that and hid the boy for 3 months. When she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him, and she came up with this brilliant plan. I mean, nobody else thought of this. I mean, how long did it take her to come up with this plan? I mean, you know, she was at least 3 months, she was hiding this, and she was thinking, okay, how can I pull this off? I'm not going to let anybody touch my baby boy. And she comes up with this incredible, risky, who knows if it's going to work. Everything's got to work perfectly to come together for this. Everybody's got to be in the right place at the right time. So she's watching, she's observing. You guys like those, what are the Danny Ocean movies? Like Ocean's 11 and 12. And you know how they go and they'll like do a little, they'll kind of scout out, see what the time, any of those good burglar movies, they'll make sure they know, how the alarms work and who's, the security rotations and all that. So she's figuring all that out. I mean, she's watching guards, she's watching the Pharaoh's daughter's bathing routine, and she's got everything dialed in down to the second. She puts the little baby, who doesn't have a name, by the way, put him in the basket, coated it with tar and pitch, so it's nice and waterproof. She placed the child in it and out in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. His sister, so he had an older sister, Miriam, stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. Remember I showed you this picture a few weeks ago from my kid's Bible that I still have? Love this picture. Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe. I don't know, when you read, if you've read the story before, do you think, oh, it was just, well, that was lucky timing? No, I mean, Jochebed, I mean, this was super mom here. I mean, she had calculated this. She knew exactly when Pharaoh's daughter, when it was bath time. And, you know, it was like, okay, synchronized watches, float baby. Miriam, go stand there, and when it's at the right time, be ready to say the magic words. Okay, so Pharaoh's daughter goes down to take a bath. Her attendants were walking along the riverbank. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her female slave to get it. She opened it and saw the baby. Biting your nails right now. What's going to happen? Okay, moms, let me just ask you. How would you put yourself in this story? I mean, this is your one chance to save your child. How stressful is the story? She opened it, and you're just looking for that. You're hiding in the reeds. You're just looking for that expression on her face. Like, you know, is it going to take? Is she going to fall in love with that little bundle? And how do you feel about that? Because she's going to fall in love with your bundle. This is a survivor story. This is one of the Hebrew babies, she said. Then his sister, so Miriam pipes in, just right according to script, right at the right time. She's got the right look on her face, according to cue. You know, out of nowhere. Hey. And she's just a kid. I mean, so this is like probably 5-7-year-old kid. Shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you? Great idea. Yes, go, she answered. The plan's working. So the girl went and got the baby's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, take this baby and nurse him for me. And I love this part of the plan. There's no way Jochebed saw this coming. She's going to actually make some pocket money off of this whole deal. I mean, that's the bonus. It's like, you know, she would have been happy to pay to do it, let alone have a little side job here. So the woman took the baby and nursed him. When the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter. Oh, how brutal is that? And he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, I drew him out of the water. So she had to hold off on even naming her baby, because she knew she was going to give that up. You know, and some of you moms have adopted, you know, and just what that, you know, and you know the, what the, maybe some of you have, I don't know, have given up for adoption or have a friend. Maybe some of you have been adopted. That's a trying emotional time in everybody's life involved. But I love this story because it has to translate into Moses' mosaic. This is an integral piece to his personality. His confidence, his security, to know that he had a mom. You don't hear anything about the dad in this story. I don't know, maybe he was just too busy, you know, laying bricks with all the other Hebrew slaves and caught up in that. But this was all the mom's plan, the mom staying up late at night trying to figure out, what can I pull off here? How can this work? Praying to God for leadership and illumination into this problem. But to know that somebody loved you, loves you so much that they would put that kind of mental energy, physical risk, put their life on the line for you, that has got to make you feel good. That has got to translate into a feeling of self-worth and value I asked Denise what did she want, what she wants to do for Mother's Day today, and I'm not sure if I don't really thought this through. How well did I take this? She goes, "Oh, I know what I want to do. I want to go out to church in Oakland at the community church and hear Pastor Lawrence give a real sermon." I don't know. And so we had some fun out there and celebrated Mother's Day with the community church out in Oakland, and that was fun. But you know, and Lawrence's mom, yeah, it's kind of fun. We got a nice little bond because both of our moms are part of our church families, and his mom was there, and he was talking about how, you know, he grew up in a tough situation. And he wasn't the most confident kid, but he would always hear his mom saying, "Well, I know my boy Larry can do that. Oh, Larry can do that." And he would like hear this, like, and it affected him. It sunk in. You know, this somebody believes in me. Maybe I can do that. And it had an impact on him throughout his life when he would doubt himself and not believe in himself. Well, somebody that knew him really well since the day he was born believed he could do anything. And it was just a really neat story to hear the impact, you know, that his mom, and then to hear her share about him later was even more entertaining. And so I wanted to spend today really exploring God's heart from a maternal side, because there's so many attributes of motherhood that originate in the heart of God. But it's that pouring over. You moms, you pour over your kids. You provide and nurture in ways that it's tough. And maybe, you know, us dads do our best, but there's just something special. And I think we don't talk about God enough in terms of those attributes, even though the Bible, as we're going to see, has plenty to say describing God's maternal side, so to speak. And, you know, and we reference God mostly because when he revealed himself through a very patriarchal culture, it makes sense that his parental nature is going to come out as father. But when we step back and we think about it, you know, this is a great quote from an article. This really makes sense. God is neither male nor female, but in whatever respect one gender excels in that respect, that gender better reflects the nature of God. For example, the typically greater male physical strength. Okay, I'm gonna make sure my daughters don't hear this, because then they always like to, you know, prove themselves to me when I get a nice little bruise. The typically greater male physical strength, significantly more important to pre-mechanical eras than now, means that in their ability to offer their security of physical protection, men in biblical times portrayed slightly better that aspect of God. On the other hand, if women tend to be a little less callous than men, maybe a lot more, in this respect, they are that bit more like God in their ability to nourish and comfort. Women typically better portray that side of God's nature. I haven't been able to use this ladder for several weeks. It's been hanging in my side yard. Because I am in among those cute little doves. And so we had a little dove's nest. And, you know, and first it was the mama bird, you know, up there, and just, you know, and I kind of had to get on another ladder to peek up there, you know, and saw the eggs, and get worried around where we, because blue jays, you know, they're kind of, you know, naughty about that, and they can attack these little baby nests and stuff. These guys made it. It was so nice. Look at those cute little guys. But you know, anytime I you know, came by, I had to go through the side yard, I would just, you know, very quietly tiptoe. Sometimes it was just the two little ones and mommy was out finding some breakfast or something. And, you know, and so I'd want to, you know, not rush through there and freak her out if she was watching, because she was just, I mean, you just sensed this loving, concerned, worried, what's a heavier word than that, but this burdened emotion in her eyes. And I mean, you could just feel it. This little bird, just how concerned she was over the protection of her little ones, you know. And I just wanted to respect that, and you know, and make sure she knew I was there. I was being gentle, and I was just going to be there for a second. And I was trying to be as quiet as possible, and then, you know, let her be at peace with her little chicks there. But we see this side in God's personality, Jesus, his own words, a sense of always having a heart for protection. When he cries out, oh, this is on that Palm Sunday when he's coming into Jerusalem, and it just breaks his heart, all the tragedy that's come out of Jerusalem. He says, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those sent to you. How often I have longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, and you are not willing. And he describes his longing, his heaviness, as a mother hen, and that desire to just bring everybody together, keep everybody safe, everybody warm. And there's this loving, very maternal aspect in God's personality that we need to talk about more, and we need to enjoy more and make sure we don't miss out on. In our Tuesday night small group, we challenged each other to do a little exercise. We're working on having more loving relationships in all our relationships, more Christ-like relationships in all our lives. And I was like, hey, how about if we do this? And one of the people in the group said, well, before we can do that, maybe it's better that before we work on somebody else, we need to let ourselves get filled up. And it was so true. And so we talked about, okay, this next couple of weeks, let's challenge ourselves to really let ourselves be loved by God the way we love our own kids, and really press into that. You know, really take yourself back to being a kid. And do that by how you feel about your own kid, and then you just gotta work. It's hard to do, because the older you get, the more rough and gruff and more of a past you build up, and the tougher it is to feel like a sweet little kid. I look pretty sweet in that picture earlier. You know, I don't feel that way. You know, I look back on that and I kind of miss that sense of innocence, you know. And then you go through, 50 years of life. That's a nice round number, easy to remember. You know, and some junk builds up in your experience, and it's hard to feel like somebody can love you the way. I just look at that picture and I know how my grandma Sonia loved me. I don't feel like anybody loved me that way now. But it's true. Okay, so I was getting a little nostalgic with pictures this week. You saw that one of me and my grandma. I want to keep working on this thread of allowing ourselves to be loved by God the way a mom loves her little one. If you thought that other picture was cute, okay, this is super cute. All right, so look at mom. You're so fun and cool. And so look at Elsie in those pictures. My kids seeing these pictures, holding me like, yeah, man, it's like, holding me on your hip, bouncing me on your knee. I put these pictures on there because, again, God describes himself in a very maternal way. Look at this passage from the book of Isaiah. Where was this? Was this in the, this wasn't Walnut Creek yet. Where was that? Was that Beirut?
That was Walnut Creek.
This one?
No.
Is that Greenway?
That one, yeah.
Okay, that's Green.
That one was Saudi Arabia.
Oh, really? Okay. So Dad was running a job out there, and then you guys were moving around? Okay. All right, but listen to the way God describes himself here. Behold, I will extend peace to her. He's talking about the nation of Israel. To her like a river, and the glory of the nations like an overflowing stream. And you shall nurse. You shall be carried upon her hip and bounced upon her knees as one whom his mother comforts. So I will comfort you. You shall be comforted in Jerusalem. And so this is how God wants you to feel. Like, I'm just going to carry you on my hip. I'm going to bounce you on my knee. I want you to feel like that little kid in your mother's arms. And if you haven't felt that way, who's felt that way? I mean, it's hard. I mean, we feel that way about our kids, our nieces, nephews, the neighborhood kids. I mean, how well do we let God love us that way? And he's yearning to let, you know, to invite us in to feeling that kind of tender motherly love that in this world, you know, only comes through our moms. God has that. Where do we think our moms get that? It all comes from God as the source of that kind of nurturing love and comfort. I feel so comforted looking at those pictures. And so my challenge is to think, okay, I know my mommy loves me like that still, but does God love me like that? And so to just like press into, okay, this is how I feel. I just take one of my kids and I just like, I think about how I worry about them, how I want to make sure they're safe, they're healthy, they're provided for, all those things. And now I start, okay, so now the challenge is letting me feel that God is feeling that way about me right now. All that energy, that mental and physical, emotional, that I'm pouring into my kids, he's pouring into me. God always comforts. It's not even the right, best word there. He's just pouring himself into you. One more passage here The message here is you're always on his mind. He always has a plan. He's always thinking of you. Just like Moses' mom was up late every night going over the plan, rehearsing it in her mind, rehearsing it the next day with Miriam, making sure everything was going to come together. God remembers you. You're not lost. You're not off the grid. You're right in the center of his thoughts. Zion is another nickname for the nation of Israel. And Zion said, "The Lord has forsaken me. I'm off the grid. I'm off his radar." It's like I look around. I don't feel like he's there. But that's never true. And God's response is, "Come on, can a woman forget her nursing child?" This is Yahweh of Israel, again, taking a feminine, maternal analogy and placing it on himself. I love that. The God of the Hebrews, you know, this very masculine, you know, Jehovah Jireh and all his other El Shaddai, all these other powerful masculine nicknames, you know, that and he's saying, "I'm just like a mom. Can a woman forget her nursing child?" how I feel about you guys. I mean, that she should have no compassion on the son of her womb? Are you kidding me? You're thinking I could ever feel detached from you? Even that may happen in human relationships, which is sad, but it's never going to happen in your relationship with God. Even these may forget, yet I will not forget you. So when you ever have that feeling that Zion said, where is God? He's forgotten me. No, his response is, can you imagine a mom forgetting about her nursing, her child that she's nursing? I feel even more caught up in you than that. That is how close and intimate and connected your God is with you. Okay, so the only way I can get there, and this is, and whether you have kids or, again, nieces or nephews or whoever, you know, or great pets, doesn't matter. It's just like, who is your loved one that you can focus in on? You know, I'm always caught up in these three. Now I gotta try to remember what I was gonna say. Let's just pick on the little one. I did this and it worked. And this is what you really have to do if you've never done this. I just really focused in on Evie and how she just gives me, all my kids give me joy. I'm just picking. I can't speak about all three of them here. And the teenagers would kill me more than her. But, okay, so I just get caught up in her so much, whether she's on the sports field and just the guts it takes to take on, you know, be in goal, you know, in a soccer game or pitch for the first time on the mound, and the way she reacts and takes failure in stride. I stress out for, you know, they played a team way over their heads last Saturday and she was making save after save, but they got a couple shots by her. And I was just so proud of her, the way she keeps standing in there and doesn't get fazed by it. And I just like, man, I want to be like, I just love, I mean, just, there's so many details. And again, I can go on and on, just like you can. You know, I mean, anytime you want to be up here and go on and on about your kids and relate that to God's love, we'll do testimonies. So what I did, I got some quiet time. It took me a good 15 minutes, which doesn't sound like a lot, but in quiet time hours, it seems like forever. And just kept telling myself, just imagine me as Eva. And God is, just imagine God loving me that detail, getting caught up the way I just get caught up in just the way she moves and talks and giggles, you know, just trying to imagine him getting caught up. And I started to, like, just, I got emotional. I mean, I was weeping. It felt so good. It was like at this heart level of just like, oh my gosh, that's real. But it took me a little while. I had to really focus and get quiet. But I really want to feel more of that and let that love of God he has for me come in on that emotional level. And I want you guys, I want us all to feel that. Because it's hard to feel that anymore as grown-ups. And I think it breaks his heart. It would break my heart that if my kids in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and, you know, forgot that feeling, didn't feel that, you know, lovableness that I hope they feel in their childhood. I want them to always feel like that. God wants you to always have that sense of His heart for you. Because His heart is always there for you. It protects, comforts, and remembers. I remember when this book, The Shack, came out. Oh, so many people, so many theologians, you know, were so upset about this little fantasy, because in it, God reveals Himself, reveals Himself as a woman to this man. As an African-American woman that calls herself Papa, but it's in the story, it's hard for me to recommend The Shack, because if you've got a pile of tissue boxes, get ready. I mean, I went through three, I'm not joking, you know, I'm not exaggerating. I cried through this whole book. It's really tough as a dad and a daughter. It's a tough book. But I remember several of my buddies saying, "You haven't read The Shack, dude, of anybody. You need to read." I'm like, I can't even watch the news at night. You know, it's like, I'm too sensitive, I guess. You know, but I was just having to field all these theological questions, you know, about the Trinity and about God, you know, God as a one, you know, it's like... It was a fascinating analogy that really picked up on the scriptures that we just showed. But the character in the book, it makes sense why God revealed Himself in a maternal way to that person because of his past and some things. I don't want to ruin it for you. So we need to embrace that side of God. Especially us guys that grew up with some cowboy dads, you know, and our father, our idea of a father figure is this kind of rough, tough, you know, and so God is, you know, this kind of rough, tough God, you know, suck it up, man up, kind of thing, and that's a human, you know, extrapolation. And so, but when we see how God reveals Himself and how He talks about Himself, He encompasses the male and the female. But I think we get scared, especially us guys, to embrace that maternal side. But we won't admit that we get scared of anything. But I think I just want to encourage all of us, men and women, to press into the heart of God and enjoy that protection and that comfort, and know that His mind is on the details of our lives. So maybe we can just relax and not have to stress as we do on all those details, knowing that our heavenly parent is watching over and has a very detailed, very intricate, very powerful plan at work for His beloved kids. "I am especially fond of you" is a phrase that repeats through that book that applies to all of God's kids, and it's this great paradox. How can you be especially fond of each of us? But that's what's so great about God, is He can. He is especially fond of you. Let me say a little prayer. Lord, thank you that we get a glimpse into your heart through our moms. Thank you for the male and the female and the great attributes of both. And today we celebrate your maternal side, that gets caught up in each and every one of us, that wants us to feel secure and not worry. Know that we're treasured. Know that we're provided for. Know that there's a plan. Know that there is always a happy ending to every story that you write. And so, Lord, let us take that time soon to press into your heart and really feel at a very emotional level that comfort and compassion that comes from your love. Let us really believe that you are especially fond of each and every one of us. Let me pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, come in your own timing to the Lord's table as we celebrate God's love, his commitment, his desire to have a relationship with each and every one of us that he proved on the cross. Come to his table. And those of you that would like to pray, our prayer team would be in the back. We'd love to pray with you.